Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Hey, Chris, welcome back. It's good to have you back here in the studio. You look like you got a little bit of sun out there. Were you on spring break or something?
I was. As an Irishman, I got it from the full moon that I saw there in the Bahamas. I was fishing in the Bahamas.
Oh, in the Bahamas. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you catch anything?
I reeled in a 1,000-pound marlin, which is in the back of my truck.
Well, your nose is growing as much as that marlin. I don't believe it until I see it. Sorry that I'm a skeptic. I got a little bit of St. Thomas in me. But anyway, what do you have for us today for topics?
We're going to start out with a Wall Street Journal article pointing out in an opinion piece that there's this threat to American health due to medical school DEI initiatives.
Okay.
The Liaison Committee on Medical Education, this is a organization which accredits MD granting programs, requires med schools to establish programs, quote, aimed at achieving diversity. Medical schools have responded to that in multiple ways. The traditional 2 years of preclinical education required to become a doctor has been reduced at more than a third of schools. At 80% of MD granting schools, the foundational courses in basic science and clinical skills are now graded pass-fail. The first part of the national licensure exam that determined residency placement has also been changed to pass-fail. At UCLA School of Medicine, according to reporting based on interviews with faculty members, more than 50% of students failed basic tests on family medicine, pediatrics, and emergency medicine. Nationwide, the percentage of medical students who pass the first part of the licensure exam has fallen every year since 2000, since they started adopting this, dropping from 97% to 89% now. This is scary stuff now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the old adage was doctors young, lawyers old. Mm-hmm. I don't want a young doctor now.
Right.
I mean, this is not like we're talking about stuff that, only matters to you on the periphery. This is
your health.
This is your health.
Gosh, but it gives new meaning to the term medical practice. Not that we're going to be practicing on you, but I would rather have someone practicing on me who has a lot more knowledge and understanding of the human body. And I remember just recently watching a testimony before Congress of a doctor who wasn't so sure that there were men and there were women. They were confused.
I saw that.
Basic biology.
There was no confusion. The doc was 100% protecting a political ideology.
It's incredible when the scientific evidence is ignored on the basis of ideological driven policies. It's crazy.
Well, it seems like there needs to be a new medical accreditor, but that's going to take years. And I mean, it could be decades before you get one that the med schools
would be recognized.
Yeah. The other thing about med school that I think about is how the smartest of our students used to go into things like medicine.
Right.
And now so many of them are drawn into technology because of the payouts. Mm-hmm. You know, like our docs.
Sure.
Docs today, I mean, it's probably always been this way, but, you know, that was, I guess, typically thought of as one of the, you know, more wealthy people in town, right?
Always, yeah.
But they don't get paid, you know, for many, many years into their practice now with their residency programs and, you know, and their internships and all that. So,
And then they have a lot of debt to pay back.
And they got a lot of debt to pay back.
My older sister's a doctor, and she, in order to get through medical school, she had to do a program where she promised to come back to a small town in South Dakota to serve for a certain number of years in their hospital in exchange for them covering her medical school expenses, which was a great arrangement, both for her to be able to make it through medical school.
And the community.
And for the community to have a good doctor in place.
But you know what that says about being a doctor? It's not a job. It's a vocation.
It really is. And my sister has always understood that. And I think most doctors do. I mean, there's some of the, you know, most generous, kind-hearted people. But the system and way it's been agglomerated is actually creating a lot of problems in conscience for doctors because they're not able to practice and actually care for people. It's turned into, you know, a big business.
A COVID-era program in San Francisco that spent $5 million of taxpayer money per year to serve booze to homeless alcoholics will shutter this year, sadly. Mayor.
Oh, whoa, whoa, wait. I don't think I heard that correctly. Can you say that again, Chris?
$5 million per year of taxpayer money to serve booze to homeless alcoholics. So
what?
The San Francisco mayor, Daniel Lurie, told the California Post that this program sadly will be going away. So the managed, the managed alcohol program was created by the San Francisco Department of Public Health in April 2020 when the city began housing homeless people in hotels during the lockdown. The program served just 55 clients during its run, so that makes their bar tab $454,000 each.
Are you serious?
So to prevent alcoholics from withdrawal symptoms while stores and bars were closed, clinicians brought metered doses of beer and liquor to clients. So
it doesn't
sound
like it was
questions.
Metered very much for $450,000.
Well, I think the cost of the just running the program was
So
I have two questions here. So one, is there a way to audibly indicate that I'm shaking my head on the radio?
You've already heard it in my voice. This is bizarre.
All right. Number two, why didn't I know about this, and why didn't more cities get together and, you know, cover my beer tab?
Oh my gosh. This borders on lunacy. But okay. You know, Chris, one of the things we try to do on this show is we try to shed light from a Catholic teaching standpoint on some of the crazy things going on in our world. Let me ask you this time. I'm going to turn the tables. From your understanding, what would Catholic teaching tell us about this kind of craziness going on?
I would say that because God drank, Jesus drank wine, that he would be perfectly in favor of this.
Okay, I can see and tell by the tone of your voice, you don't really believe that. What do you really believe?
I think this is ridiculous. I mean, seriously, taxpayer money on this for starters, the concept of it and the enablement and the waste and everything around it is just ridiculous.
It is completely ridiculous. I mean, it's another reason why the government should not get involved in these type of things. And really, in order to break free from this type of a habit, people need the support of a loving community. The government is just enabling them. They're not really caring about these people. So, gosh, there's so many things we could say, but I think we, our listeners probably are smart enough to understand that there's some craziness going on there.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Jesse Van Rootseler was the 18-year-old transgender resident of British Columbia who killed eight people in a recent mass school shooting. Aiden Hale was the transgender shooter in Nashville, Tennessee at the Covenant School shooting where he killed six people. Robin Westman was the transgender shooter in Minneapolis at Annunciation Catholic School where he killed two children and injured 17 more. Most recently, Robert Dorgan was the transgender shooter in Pawtucket, Rhode Island at the high school hockey game shooting that killed two. In each of these cases, the media refused to identify the shooter as transgender and referred to these assailants as being female. At a press conference for the British Columbia shooting, officials called the shooter a gun person.
A gun person.
Yes, the gun person.
Interesting.
So the press agonized over the pronouns rather than reporting the actual details of the crime. So, the legacy media just continues to shoot themselves in the foot thinking we're stupid.
Mm. Well, some people are because they're refusing to see reality. I mean, that's the very definition of stupid, isn't it? When people see the very facts in front of them and have to explain it away with all kinds of circumlocutions and
the emperor has no clothes
language. It really is. And it's really sad. But the reality is a person who is struggling with their own identity, their gender identity, has got some usually psychological problems. And these are manifesting in really violent ways in these acting out in these shootings. You know, it's kind of scary when such a small percentage of the population, what is it? You know, the latest Gallup study, it was like 2 or 3% of the population, I think.
Oh, no, way less than that.
Well, according to their statistics, they're saying it's 3 to 4%, and it's actually gone down from what it was before.
I think it'd be 0.2% of the population.
That's entirely possible. I mean, anytime you get into these statistics, it's questionable. But any way you slice it, it's a tiny percentage of the population, and a disproportionate amount of these shootings are happening through from transgender shooters.
Some of the articles that I was reading around this were, you know, going along the lines of, you know, you got men with testosterone, and then you add estrogen and other female hormones into the male hormonal balance, and you're getting
everything out of whack.
You're throwing everything out of whack, and it kind of makes sense to me. You know, like, this is just not right. It's not.
That would be interesting to study from a scientific perspective. I haven't read any articles on that in particular, but just going back to, all right, what do we see here from a Catholic perspective? What does our faith shed? What light does it shed? I think the reality is, any time that we stray from God's plan and the way that God has created us, and He's created us male and female, not with 17 different identities. There's male and female. And when we stray from God's plan, it creates problems in the human psyche. It creates imbalances that cause depression, anxiety, acting out in ways that are really detrimental to the people around us.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
In a doomsday article about AI revolution, a fellow named Matt Schumer warns that lawyers, finance experts, journalists, copywriters, programmers, workers in the health industry, and customer service agents will all soon be on the chopping block because of AI.
And where was this article from?
This is a fellow who is he runs an AI startup, and he just published this blog online that had 35 million views, by the way.
Oh, wow.
As of, I think, last week.
Were those real people or were they AI bots?
This fellow was basically publishing this blog saying that he's done a number of AI startups, and now he just realized that he obsoleted himself.
Okay.
So he is suggesting that AI systems are on track to not only do this basic foundational work of programming code and whatnot, but that it's on track to replace human, this is a quote from him, replace human judgment, creativity, strategic thinking, and even empathy.
Mm.
So he, you know, the one thing he asks is, or tells people, is get your financial house in order. I'll tell you about a separate article I read yesterday on this, but, you know, let's talk about this first thing about his idea that you could possibly replace, you know, empathy. Let's take that one. That's just, that's impossible. A machine can't be empathetic.
Well, it can. I mean,
it can't truly be empathetic. It can act like it's empathetic.
Well, what is empathy? It can't be empathetic in the sense that it's just a machine, right? But it can mimic
right
what a person needs to feel heard and understood. And this happens to me every time I use AI. I put in a comment and I give it some feedback, and so, oh, yes, you are right.
Right.
You know,
right.
It affirms
right.
you.
Every time.
And that's how it's designed. Okay. So it makes you feel good. And this is like in Japan, they've been experimenting with this for almost a decade now. There are young men who have no interest in getting married because they're in love with their bot.
Yeah. Or their avatar or whatever.
Their
yeah.
avatar, because it's, you know, it affirms them and it talks to them, makes them feel good, tells them what they want to hear. So it is mimicking.
Right, but when you get down to empathy. It on a you know, on the base level, down to brass tacks, I can't imagine, let's say, the nursing industry and the right. empathy that surrounds that, mm-hmm. right? We talked in a previous episode about how they're so highly valued and their profession is so highly thought of across right. America, probably because mostly this empathy, right?
Well, and because they're at a critical point when you're suffering and you yeah. need help, and they're there to care for you.
So someone who has a real dog versus, you know, the Boston Dynamics robot dog, mm-hmm. you know, that can do everything that the real dog does. But, I mean, you want the real dog. And I can't see
not
that.
Not everyone does.
Well, okay.
Get enough people who bought that new electronic pet.
Yeah. Well, that's what my wife would like, is a dog that doesn't go to the bathroom.
Exactly. It's a lot less to clean up on. You don't have to worry about fur all over the house, too. And
Nonetheless, you're looking for that true companionship in a dog, and you're looking for that true, authentic empathy in your caregiver. Mm-hmm. And a machine's never going to be able to do that. I mean, there's other... I can see...
I don't know. I don't know, Chris. I think there's an element that this AI can feed in the narcissism of people. Because I think you're right in the sense that we need authentic connection. We need authentic relationships. But if a person's not really looking for that and they're looking just to feed themselves and feel good about themselves, I think AI has, and all these bots and robots and fake pets, they have the capacity to feed the narcissism and feed the this feeling that I need to feel validated. So I think there's a real danger in this. I agree that there is it's much more natural and more fulfilling to have a real relationship in which you can actually hurt the other person or they're not attentive to you and you got to deal with that. It creates more grit and resilience in a person and it strengthens the relationships. But if a person's looking just for validation or for feeling good, these machines are going to do that.
It makes me think of the SNL skit from years ago when they had the Alexa on silver mode where it's just listening to an old person talk and then every couple of seconds they would go, that's all the people were looking for us. They felt right. Like they're being heard.
Yeah. I mean, there are people that will call into these call centers and just so they can talk with someone. That's why a lot of the scams work, because older people are just lonely and they want to talk with someone.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. A new book entitled Red Dawn Over China challenges the fairy tale pushed by the Communist Party of its ascent to power, i.e. the communist story, the communist version of the story, which is the communist David under Mao Zedong versus the nationalist Goliath led by Chiang Kai-shek.
Mm-hmm.
The author's contention is that Mao's version of history is almost entirely bogus. He says the Maoist fable is similar to the Bolsheviks in Moscow, where a small number of people, in the case of the Bolsheviks, 25,000, were able to take over the whole country, not through some huge battle, but in the case of Russia, because no one was willing to defend it because right. of the exhaustion from World War One.
Sure.
Similarly, in China, before 1940, only one in 1,700 Chinese citizens was a communist. One in 1,700.
Mm-hmm.
But with the help of Russia's Stalin, who armed and funded the communists and then sent a million-strong army into Manchuria to violently subjugate the Chinese countryside and cities, the Soviet troops stayed until May of 1946, locking out the central government of Chiang Kai-shek and handing over the countryside to the communists. In those countryside villages, Mao ran a scorched earth campaign to conquer starving people by dividing the villages into different classes. Classes mm-hmm. of landlords, rich peasants, middle peasants, poor peasants, and laborers. Then he turned hardship into hatred and had the poorest class beat and kill anyone who was even notionally rich. They might have been notionally rich in that they had a few more sacks of rice or because they had a window on their house.
Mm-hmm.
So the Communist Party pushes a narrative that people fled areas controlled by the nationalists to the communist areas. But in fact, the opposite is what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. then played a role in strengthening the communists when Harry Truman sent General George Marshall to China, thinking that the communists were not ideologists, but merely rural reformers who could then help shape a democratic China. So Marshall brokered a ceasefire meant to last for 2 weeks. It turned into 4 months, and that allowed the retreating communists to regroup, recruit fresh soldiers from the countryside, which were paid for by Russia,
mm-hmm.
and start their attack. Then a reporter from Kansas City, by the way, this is so interesting how much the Americans had a role here,
mm-hmm.
named Edgar Snow, was handpicked by the communists to interview Mao and wrote a book based on the series of interviews where he was spoon-fed propaganda. The book was called Red Star Over China. So the new book here is obviously a play on
mm-hmm.
So Red Star Over China became the basis for all subsequent accounts of the rise of the Communist Party. So it's interesting that the U.S. helped create its biggest rival, and now the country that we kind of orient ourselves around militarily in every way, shape, and form now. But how easy, too, the overthrow of the government and subsequent, now, you know, we're looking at 70 years, 80 years of communist 80. Rule, right. And we're still looking at it in, 100 plus years now in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems too easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, what can you say? I mean, look down through all the annals of history, and overthrows of government have taken place time and time again. And this manipulation of history, selective presentation of the facts is just that's a pattern that we see over and over, especially in communist regimes. I think I've told you a little bit, Chris, about my trip to Vietnam. It's very similar. There's a whitewashed history of communism in Vietnam, which doesn't correspond to reality at all. I mean, their communist dictator there in Vietnam is still reverenced. He's on billboards everywhere. He's dead. He's basically portrayed as a god. And yet in his life, the guy had multiple sexual liaisons with people and sexual abuse of young women. I mean, it's really horrific. This guy would be in jail in any Western society. And yet he's by the Communist Party in Vietnam, he's put forward as this great hero.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, prescient for us in America with the election of the New York mayor, Mamdani. Mm-hmm. And we think of this as happening on the edges and, oh, this is kind of funny to see what's going to happen there. I mean, that was my initial, reaction to his election. But that's all it could take is you flip one city and the ball gets rolling.
Mm-hmm. So that's the history of communist takeovers in countries around the world. And I think we're delusional if we think it couldn't happen here. Yes, it can.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. There's a trend happening where social media influencers are encouraging divorced women to repurpose their diamond engagement rings to mark the end of their matrimonies.
Mm-hmm.
So model Emily Ratajkowski helped divorce rings go mainstream after she split from her husband and shared online that she had the two large diamonds from her engagement ring refashioned into two divorce rings. So another woman, Allison Kemla, a New York-based jeweler, says that, quote, reclaiming the stones and making it about yourself and your journey can be extremely empowering. I always love when things are empowering.
Oh, yes.
Jade Schenker, a New York City real estate agent who stars on the Netflix show Owning Manhattan, says, quote, it feels kind of cool to say I'm someone's first wife, unquote. She wants to reframe divorce as a status symbol rather than a stigma. She says, quote, the most badass women in the world are Upper East Siders who've had two or three husbands and don't care what anyone thinks, unquote.
I think they're the most unhappy people. Gosh. It's really sad when you have to totally reframe reality and brokenness and dysfunction and breakdown of love and say that that's a triumph.
Well, in addition to this, there's a different trend being pushed by popular clothing brand Reformation, who teamed up with celebrity divorce lawyer Laura Wasser for its new, quote, divorce collection, which features a $128 dump him sweatshirt. The divorce lawyer, who has represented several Hollywood celebs in their divorces, says she's helping erase the taboo around divorce and reminds us all that, quote, you're never married to one decision, even if you did actually marry them, unquote. It's kind of sick, right? The glamorizing of divorce and trivializing of marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's preying upon some, different tendencies that we all have. When we go through a moment of difficulty, we think that, oh, the solution is to just break it off and not work through the relationship. Kind of goes back to the topic we were just talking about with AI. If you're going into a relationship just for selfish, narcissistic reasons, as soon as it's uncomfortable or difficult, you end it. You break it off. But that's not the nature of authentic relationship. Every relationship goes through its ups and downs and difficult moments. And so when we have a culture which is fostering people to break off the relationship, to cancel any difficult conversation, to shut people out of your lives rather than deal with it, We're forcing ourselves more and more into a narcissistic position.
Well, and it's also forcing ourselves into the concept of marriage as contract rather than marriage as covenant.
That's exactly right.
And so when someone doesn't fulfill one side of the contract, what do? You sue them. Well, what's that in marriage? You divorce them.
Divorce.
Versus
and see what you can get out of it.
And see what you can get out of
yep.
it. Right. Versus the concept of marriage as covenant, where you fulfill your obligation regardless of whether the other fills theirs.
That's right. Yeah. And I just did a marriage retreat weekend this past weekend and had some really interesting conversations with people about this. But one of the phrases that I've heard recently that's come a lot actually from the Spanish speaking world is tengo derecho a la felicidad, which means I have a right to be happy. And this has occasioned so many divorces in the Latino community, because when you get into that mentality that I have a right to happiness, if this person's not making me happy, I have a right to take care of myself first. But that's not what marriage is. Our Lord says it very clearly, citing Genesis, a man will leave his mother and father, cling to his wife, and the two become one.
And it doesn't mean it's going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy. And that's what I always tell couples in their marriage prep. This is going to be difficult, but it's also going to be beautiful if you truly put Christ at the center.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
According to the Wall Street Journal, the number of farmers in America is rapidly shrinking as rising costs and weak commodity prices push more families out at a faster rate. In 2025, 315 farms filed for bankruptcy, which was up 46% from 2024. That's according to bankruptcy court data.
Mm-hmm.
Those left are aging. There are now more age 75 and older farmers than there are age 35 and under, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The disappearance of small farms comes as children of farmers today have more opportunities to work beyond agriculture than they did decades ago, and families are smaller, shrinking the pool of possible succession candidates. So as someone, you, I'm talking about, who grew up on a farm, I thought you might have some insights on this. Because, well, you know, you didn't left the farm. You didn't plant the back 40 this morning, did you?
That's right. I did not. Well, and just to be clear, I didn't grow up on a farm. I grew up near farms. Both my grandparents were farmers, both sides of the family. And I grew up working on farms from the time I was 8 years old. But and I saw this dynamic taking place before my very eyes in the years that I was growing up in northern Iowa. So many young people, they would move to the city, go off to college, and the work opportunities were not back on the farm. All the small family farms have basically disappeared, and you've got major corporations which are running the land and farming everything. And it's shifted the nature of small towns across America.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the American ethos, right? And just totally. I mean, this is definitely more efficient probably the way that we do it, but it's still sad.
It is, and there's a whole culture that's lost with that. And I think a closeness to the land that is healthy in a human person. But, you know, there are shifts throughout history, and we'll probably see shifts again in the future.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.